The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
Hey there, welcome to The Undercurrent. I'm Tara Sloan. As we wrap up Women's History Month, I wanted to chat with an inspiring woman from right inside the Sharks organization. Sarah Salam is the team's Director of Diversity, Inclusion, and Belonging, but her resume reads like somebody who's lived a few different lifetimes at least. Sarah previously worked in HR for the Boston Red Sox and the LA Clippers, and she's also a published author and poet, a true Renaissance woman, as it were. Now, to celebrate and honor the women who work in the Sharks organization, Sarah wrote this poem, United by Teal. Here it is, read by our colleagues, followed by a chat with Sarah herself.
United by Teal, written and sealed, in an envelope of thick skin.
Determined to win. No, command respect, knees sometimes shaking, earth quaking, this life is ours for the taking.
Strong, big hearts, kind, do not mistake my beauty for absence of mind. I grind, just like you. This journey you're on, I'm on it too. It's curvy, not linear. Let me paint you a picture.
You're too tough. You're too soft. To this, I want to tell them, get lost. I am human. You are too. Sometimes conflicting things can coexist and both can be true. We're all swimming upstream.
Chasing the dream. There's pain, there's hurt. There's days I don't want to go to work. This system set up against us. No fault of my peers.
But our responsibility is clear. To address and change course, this isn't the only war we're fighting. There's no denying society is a chaos begging for redesigning.
Change has many lanes. I live it every day. And we live what we allow. I'm not here to tell you how or disavow your choices. Let us use our voices and back them with action. There will always be distractions.
Control is an illusion. I will not give in. Too much more often than not, the struggle is within. Am I capable? Am I worthy? Do I belong here? Am I deserving? Can you relate?
What does it mean to be an outsider? If I am water, you must be fire. No, we can coexist. All four elements make a whole. Without one, there is no this. So let us persist. Let us coexist. Let us make the world a better place than the one that we started with.
Sarah joins me now. Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Tara. How's it going?
It's good. It's good. So we've just listened to the Women of Teal poem, and first of all, it's all of it resonates with me. Literally all of it. I asked for a written copy. I'm like, yep. So I'm wondering, what was your inspiration initially for this?
Yeah, you know, this poem is so representative and truly a culmination of so many of my experiences, not only as a woman of teal, but also as a woman in sports, as a woman in the modern world. Coupled with my love and passion for writing and writing poetry specifically, it is just so representative of who I am as a person, and I couldn't be prouder of this work of art.
Is there anything in there that kind of, you know, I mean, I write poetry, I write essays, and, you know, there's always like a line or two that I'm like, oh yeah, that captures it all. Is there anything in there that you're like, oh, that's just really like a nugget of my experience?
Oh my gosh, I love that you asked that. There are definitely a couple. I think the most prominent one is the line that reads, sometimes conflicting things can coexist and both can be true.
Mm-hmm.
This line has a bit of history for me also. The first time that I wrote this line was in a letter to a person that I love and who truly inspires me. And it really connects so much of what I believe and what I see. And it's really incredible what you can connect if you pay attention. And so, and this letter I wrote about a year ago, and here I found it so powerful in this context. And there's maybe like three or four different meanings I could associate with it. I think it truly speaks to what some folks, particularly in the academic space, might refer to as intersectionality or the overlap of different identities. For example, I can be both an athlete and an artist, or someone who likes to fish and a conservationist. I can be a citizen of the world and a true globetrotter, but also a homebody. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and so a lot of times we think these things have to be separate, but they don't have to be. Queen Elizabeth once said, you know, I am both a monarch and a grandmother. Mm-hmm. And those are, you know, it's so powerful what we can go, what we can see when we have these different things and see how they overlap. The same can be said of mixed emotions, right? I can be both happy and sad, hopeful and afraid. I don't know that we as a society do a good enough job allowing for these mixtures or these overlaps or these conflicting things, as I refer to them. Mm-hmm. But I really hope that people can know that it's okay and that it's in fact normal and very much a part of being a human to have these things. Even my name, you know, my name is Sarah Salam, which is both biblical, the Sarah piece of it, and then Salam is the Quranic piece. So even like my own identity, for example, is something that, you know, represents conflicting things. And then the last thing I'll say about this particular line too is it really speaks to my personal credo, which is facts are facts, but truth is personal.
Mm-hmm, I love that very much.
Thank you. It's something that it is very much a common thread throughout all of my writing, which is something that has been a part of me since I started keeping journals when I was about 10 years old. And there's a line in one of the Indiana Jones movies, the Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, where Professor Jones talks about how archaeology is the search for fact, not truth. And if it's truth you're looking for, Dr. Tyree's philosophy class is down the hall.
That's great.
I think it's such a great representation too of, you know, what we can experience in the world and the truth that we bring to it is a product of our experiences, our own baselines, and those things are all true and all meaningful because they're our experience. Yeah. So yeah, very that line. If there was any line in this poem that represents the true takeaway and what I hope for people to resonate with, it would be that one.
There's so many. I also loved that one, and I mean, because you can look at it, you know, the way you're discussing it, and then also just from a macro level, like what does it mean to be a woman? Like we are not a monolith, right? We are not like all one way. And also what it evoked for me is I think we are in such bite-sized pieces now, the way that we consume media, right? Like we have no attention span. And I very much include myself. Yeah. We're on Twitter. We're dealing in, you know, 240 characters at a time, which has no nuance.
Yeah.
And so there's just so much room for misinterpretation. And then there's also like this sense that, yeah, nothing outside of what we say can exist. So I loved it too. I think there's so much in there. I'm going to tell you one line that I highlighted if I could.
Please.
And I think it's related though. It's, let me paint you a picture. You're too tough. You're too soft to this. I want to tell them, get lost. I'm human. You are too. Sometimes conflicting things can coexist and both can be true. So that the too tough and too soft part is, that outside of, you know, two things can coexist. It's also like, how are we supposed to be? And there's no way, right? There's no way. That there's no prescription, right?
Exactly. There's no recipe. There's no, you know, it's not like here, this is what it means to be a woman. Like that does not exist. The beauty of being a human and being a woman is that we can create that narrative for ourselves. And I think, you know, part of being human is the power of our consciousness, which gives us our ability to tell stories and to create our own stories and build that path for ourselves, both personally and professionally. And that, again, kind of goes back to this idea of what a woman was supposed to do, right? Mm-hmm. Back not even that long ago. Even my mom was a commodity broker / manager in the 80s, and she didn't have any peers that were females. And it was really interesting for her, I think, to live in a world like that. She had 5 brothers, which I think really prepared her for that role in particular. And to be in a position where she liked to joke also that her role was based on commission. And so she never really felt like she was being put down like directly in certain ways. The systems piece, you know, is a whole other conversation entirely. There's that individual, right, experience, and then there's that how you experience life or reality within a system, and how that system and how the rules of that system dictate what's possible. And that, you know, is a whole rabbit hole unto itself. But
yeah, that's a you know, many years worth of conversations there. I like the way you described, even just before that line, the journey you're on, I'm on it too. It's curvy, not linear. That resonated with me. I'm sure it resonates with everybody else, and very much speaks to, I think, your specific journey too, which is like, you know, when I first was joining the Sharks organization and I wanted to know who you were, I was looking you up and I wasn't sure if I was finding the same person. I was looking up Sarah Salam and I was like, oh, well, that's the diversity, inclusion, belonging person. And then there's a different Sarah Salam who's an author. But as it turns out, your curvy journey means that that's all you.
That's all me. I am one in the same.
So when you had, it was very touching seeing all the women of Teal, the women who work in the Sharks organization, read this poem. What kind of reactions did you get? I mean, obviously, you know, for some people, reading in front of a camera is not the most comfortable place, but what was your reaction from some of these women?
To be completely honest, when I saw the first cut, I cried. I thought it was so powerful to see all these beautiful, strong, unique women speaking lines that I had written. And it was the first time I truly saw my work expressed in that sort of way. And it was just the most, I really can't describe it. I just thought it was the most moving thing. And it really, even in the wake of the shoot, I got a few of the ladies reached out to me and expressed how grateful they were to participate, which was just so meaningful to me, and how they felt that they connected with the work and hoped that they gave it the justice that they thought it deserved. And I just thought it was, I really can't explain how grateful I am. It really is just the most powerful thing to see words that you wrote, spoken, performed, just recited by people that not only are your peers, but people that you respect and look up to, across up and down the organization. It really is just such a moving experience.
In your position with the team, these nights are, you know, all of these incredible nights of celebration are under your purview in some way. What is the importance of, you know, identifying like South Asian Heritage Night, celebration of Black history, and a Women of Teal Night? What's the importance and significance of a team like the Sharks doing this?
Definitely. It's such an important part of the conversation to bring the awareness to our community first, but also just to the greater world, and how we might connect the dots for people who might not necessarily be familiar with the South Asian culture, or with Lunar New Year, for example. I feel like in that conversation, or the thread of the DINB narrative, we are in a place now as a society where, because of this heightened exposure and access to information and how much we can learn about the world in such a fast and short speed of a short period of time. Sometimes it can be hard to process what that actually might mean, or how that actually might connect to me. Like, for example, so I am half Indian. My father was Punjabi. And so that part is really powerful to me and part of my identity. And to be able to have a platform to share some of those things that make South Asian culture unique is really great, but also how you make that connection for others. And like the parts of the South Asian culture that will resonate. So for example, the dancing piece, right? And the music, and the art with the henna. And there's just so many things that are represented across all cultures, but every culture has its own unique dance or art or food. And so using this as an opportunity to educate people on those things and find the connections for themselves. And that's truly what I view my role to be, is somewhat of an individual who makes connections for people that they may not necessarily see, but certainly exist, and then help to further that conversation of creating a space where we can all coexist.
Well, that was going to be my next question, is sort of, you know, what does your role encompass? And I'm sure that is a question that's not so straightforward and a bit of an amorphous role in a way.
I love that word.
Yeah. But, you know, like I was talking to Brock McGillis, the LGBTQ plus activist and educator. And, you know, he said, and this was his take, is he's like, yeah, Pride nights are great, but you know, you can't just check a box and be done. Right. And I know I wouldn't be with this organization if I felt this was a box checking NHL team. Right. I know that's not what's happening. I know that there are lots of things happening under the surface that in behind the scenes that people don't necessarily know outwardly. So how important is that? Right. It can't, I guess the word would be performative. It can't be performative. It has to be substantial.
Exactly. You're absolutely right. It becomes a challenge where, you know, kind of if we take a step back and kind of understand where we are in the cycle of this conversation, right? We're in this conversation, meaning the DINB conversation, this awareness, this like what it means to have so many different points of view and experiences coexisting amongst each other. And validating all of those experiences, right? Because it's not fair for me to invalidate my own experience just to make somebody feel better, right? And vice versa. And that's really tricky. Mm-hmm. And so much of this, again, going back to kind of where we are in the dialogue, we're at this, like, I would argue the very, not maybe very beginning, not the precipice, but certainly in that phase where people are starting to have these conversations and become more aware and understand that just because someone doesn't have an experience like theirs or doesn't have the same views or the same points of view doesn't mean that they don't exist or that they aren't valid. And so, and this kind of fits into that short-term versus long-term purview of I want to say strategy, but that just sounds too corporate-y for like what or how I'm trying to describe it at this point. But it's how do you create a space in the short term that opens up opportunities for these conversations with the goal of getting to a long-term place where you have a space where people can coexist in harmony and with respect and appreciate others for the diversity of our opinions, which in fact is part of our pioneering principles as an organization. So much of this work is rooted in not only our organizational objectives, but also as a functional strategy, right? And how we integrate all functional groups. All functional groups, in fact, this year are responsible for connecting DINB to their functional group strategies, right? So,
I don't know what that means. Explain right. What's a functional group.
Exactly. So I'm glad you asked. So we have different groups within the organization. It's similar to a department. We've got, you know, you have your HR group and you have your legal group, you have R&B, which is revenue and brand, which actually does make up about half of our business operation, which is interesting in scale. But then within those groups, you've got, you know, your global partnership team, you have your integrated marketing team, you have your customer experience functional group, business intelligence. There are so many different units that are responsible for creating experiences for our fans, for our customers, for our employees. It's, you know, there's so many different concentric circles for those visual people. You know, there's just so much overlap. I use the Venn diagram analogy a lot mm-hmm. in my work, because there is so much that common ground that we seek. You know, we are so much the same, but also different. And so how do we use that to move forward and continue these conversations? And so, you know, my role is also very new to the organization. I am the first I'm the first person in my role as it exists. And I started in January of 2022. So I'm about 15 months in. And this was a position that was sought by a group of employees who believe very much in this space and were able to get the headcount approved and create, you know, a dedicated person to help further this work. And so in that nature too, or in that vein, my role is very horizontal. I have, which is great in a lot of ways, and that I have purview in a lot of things, but it also means I'm always busy.
Right. It sounds gigantic, quite frankly.
And so it is. And I think, you know, a lot like the realistic execution of it is trying to identify the areas. And this is essentially what I did within my first 6 months to a year, was identify the areas that have, or maybe more further along, right? And maybe need less of my support, and then areas that maybe need a little bit more support. And then also the areas that maybe have in the short term versus long term, a higher impact versus a lesser impact. And that's so hard to quantify and to qualify. Mm-hmm. But you got to start somewhere. And that's kind of, you know, a lot of that has been establishing a baseline. And so as we move forward, it's moving towards that long term goal by building out these short term projects and initiatives that help us further the conversation and move us along the journey.
I am sure, you know, I know that all 32 teams in the National Hockey League are different from one another, have different initiatives internally, et cetera. I truly believe that the Sharks are one of the most progressive. But, you know, for you as somebody coming from the National Basketball Association, from Major League Baseball, do you feel comfortable giving me a NHL report card? Because, I mean, I've certainly been quite vocal about, you know, I think the NBA tends to lead the way in a lot of areas. But yeah, and I have also been very vocal about saying that I think the NHL tends to lag behind in some of these areas of sort of diversity, inclusion, acceptance.
Sure.
What do you think?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And I tend to agree. I do believe the NBA is, I would argue, maybe the most progressive when it comes to furthering the conversation, driving innovation. I think one of the really cool things that they have that other leagues could benefit from is their Teambo functional group. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, but basically, they've got these, they have like a dedicated group that travels to the different clubs and essentially like information collects and then creates processes to help share that across all of the clubs, which certainly helps in the spirit of communication, alignment, consistency. There's a lot of like great resources that are shared that way. And so I definitely think, especially at the pace at which we move now in the modern world, things change so quickly. And so to be kept informed is super critical. For all of our businesses. And I would say the NHL too, well, taking a step back, comparing to my time at the MLB, it's been a little bit of time since I've been with MLB and the current commissioner had just started. So I think it would be unfair to make that comparison, but I feel like the NHL has some opportunities with the information sharing piece. I'm not sure, like the communication, I've noticed isn't the most streamlined and most consistent. And I really do think that that affects so much of the knowledge that we have and how we go about doing our work to create that consistency and alignment and experience that, you know, we want to have across hockey, professional hockey in that way. So yeah, it's like, it's such an interesting, you know, I went to the club meetings last year and I thought that was really a really great opportunity to align with the different clubs and the league itself. And so, you know, and I even recommended to the league or to my counterparts at the league, the value of, you know, sharing best practices and creating more opportunities for that and allowing more clubs to get in front of other clubs to share that information. Because there is, I think, somewhat of a disconnect between between those two entities, between the league and the rest of the teams. So I do think it's something that can be, the gap can be filled. It's just, you know, we need to be proactive and take responsibility for doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I look at what Kim Davis has in front of her and I think, like, just how? But yeah. I mean, you know, there are a lot of people, I think, who are, you know, not just people with titles like yours, but certainly people internally who are really dedicated to doing this work. So I think, you know, it's glacial in some ways, but the change is coming for sure. It's inevitable. I'm wondering how you kind of got here because, well, you're a California girl and you're still a writer. But how did you move into the HR space as a, you know, a budding newspaper woman, I guess, for lack of, I don't know how you say, a budding journalist?
Yes,
newspaper woman sounds so like fuddy-duddy old.
I think there was a, I was just watching Gilmore Girls the other day and there is a place where it like the one of the characters, Rory, right, becomes a, her aspiration is to be a newspaper woman and she says it just like that. And that's exactly where my brain went.
Yeah, no, I sometimes regress or I don't know, morph into like old timey Tara. So forgive me.
Yeah, my path. So it's really interesting. I've kind of had three different journeys, I guess you could say, as it relates to my roles in front office sports, my people culture HR DIB journey, and then my writing author journey. They've all kind of ebbed and flowed and intertwined and diverged along, you know, the journey that is my life so far. And the beginnings of my HR career were with the Red Sox. My first job actually at the Red Sox was in the ticket office. I was what was called a ticket services associate. And I did that for a season. And I realized that I really liked the people piece of it and that interfacing with customers, but I didn't necessarily like the transactional nature of it. And that it was, I didn't get to build relationships really. It was, you know, single ticket buyers, I had some relationships with season ticket holders, but not really. So I felt like I wanted to be in a role where I could invest in people and help develop people. And so long story short, the head of HR gave me a shot as an HR coordinator, at the beginning of my second season. So this was April of 2012. And so that was really the jump start to my HR career. And I did that for four seasons with the Red Sox before I decided Boston was too cold and had too much snow.
All right.
You know, 86 inches of snow for a California girl that grew up with palm trees, you know, was a little jarring.
I get it. Listen, I lived 49 of my years in Canada and people are like, oh, you should be used to winter by now. No, thanks.
So it's really interesting. And then my mom actually was born and raised in North Dakota. And so she had an opposite experience. She moved to LA when she was 15, when her mom got a job as a school teacher. And she describes an experience with seasonal depression, like the opposite way, and that she was very confused that she didn't have seasons here in Southern California. So, you know, everyone's baseline is different, right?
That's
that
true.
Just goes to show. And so after this was the 2015 season, I was lucky enough to receive an offer from the LA Clippers. And so I got to move back to Southern California, where I spent a couple of seasons with the team as their HR manager. And so expanded my purview and became more of a generalist. And then I did some HRA things after that role. I worked for a tech company, some other like a leadership development company, and smaller, shorter term roles. Because I think at that point I started to realize I didn't want to just not to belittle HR. HR is a super important and powerful function, is absolutely necessary and an essential strategic partner. But I wanted to expand my focus based on, you know, what I've seen as, you know, different parallels of the people experience. And kind of ironic in that I went from focusing on internal, the people population, and now I'm, you know, doing both. I'm doing internal people population, and I'm also working with fans and customers and partners as well. So it is really a beautiful kind of hindsight. And then I guess concurrently to all of this too, I've been a writer forever. I first started writing movie reviews for my local hometown newspaper, the Daily Pilot, back when I was 11 years old.
Wow, and that's great. Do you still have some of those?
I sure do. My mom was so great. And she has an album of all the clippings. I think the first one was in 1998. And I did that until I was 18. And then I continued on the journalistic path. I was editor-in-chief of my high school newspaper. I became a sports editor at the Daily Bruin at UCLA and covered beats like tennis, water polo, football. And then, you know, flash forward to now, I have 13 books that I've written and published, mostly about, I like to say and describe them as focused on rules and relationships. Rules in the sense of like norms, culture, behavior, how we respond to things, and what actually creates rules, and, you know, what does it mean to break them? And then of course, relationships of all kinds, personal, professional, friendships, romantic, all of the above. And so it, I'd like to, you know, this poem, and then I also write poetry as well. I have 3 poetry books. And so, this poem, United by Teal, is basically the intersection of all of these 3 paths. And so I could not be more proud and grateful. And it's just, it really is just such a wonderful feeling to see all of those things come together.
I love when that happens. That's so great. I can't help but wonder if you have any time to sleep. because it seems like a lot. It seems, I mean, you are an accomplished author and you've got a more than full-time job. So, I mean, wow.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, it is. I'm certainly a productive person, I guess. I think the writing piece in particular, it really is like therapy for me. It does. I am one of those people that has a lot of thoughts, and so it does help me make sense of the world. You know, in this world, there is, you know, there's a lot going on, right? And to touch a little bit on mental health, I do believe as a kid, particularly in high school, I'm pretty sure I had an undiagnosed OCD. I am not a doctor, but just based on the behaviors that I had and the experiences that I had and my near obsession with being such a great student and trying to do like so many things, I think now, you know, flash forward to today and a lot of the work that I've done on myself and trying to figure out how I navigate and how I respond to things and what I can do to help create more balance in my life has been truly helpful. Learning to be patient, not only with others, but with myself, and give myself time and space.
Which
and
has so, to be key in your role, I would think.
100%.
The patience 100%. Piece. Yeah.
Oh, you're absolutely right. There's nothing I have learned. And, you know, there are really important people in my life that have taught me that, how to be patient, and what that can look like. And it shows up in different forms, right? And then also this idea of urgency, and that things, you know, you have to be very thoughtful about what is considered urgent, what you need to do right this second versus what you can do later in the day versus later in the week versus next month. And, you know, be kind to yourself about that, and accept that it's okay to not have to do everything right now. I think that's probably the biggest lesson that I've learned, at least in the last couple of years.
Teach me. I'm terrible.
Maybe I'll write a book about it.
Yeah, please do. Sarah, before I let you go, then with some patience and some urgency, I wonder, you know, what are your objectives? What would you like to see happen specifically within the Sharks organization? What are some shifts you'd like to see? I mean, we're in a great place. I feel like I need to say that, but yeah, what do you want to see?
Yeah, no, that's a great, great question. I would love for us to get to a place where we have, so our vision as an organization is to pioneer the future of sports and entertainment. And I think for me, what I'd really like for us to do is define what that looks like what does that future look like? And I think that will really help us dictate what it is that we do in order to get there. You know, the future is this very nebulous idea, right? Like the future, it's just kind of this word, this thing. And I think, you know, we're a great organization that has so many initiatives and efforts that support like a good future and what like we believe to be a good future. But I do think we need to be more, clear and make connections for people as to what that looks like so that they can get behind what it is that we're trying to do and see, again, those connections between what we do on the ice, within the community, within our organization, and as a partner to moving society along. I think that's really where we need to start. And I don't want to misspeak in that we're starting. We've been doing this work mm-hmm. a long time. I want that to be very clear. This organization is very much rooted in this work and has values that we act on, and you can see in our behaviors and how we conduct ourselves. Of course, we're not perfect. Perfection is an illusion. There's no. I just do not believe in it.
No, you can't. No, but I agree. I mean, it certainly, you know, I pay close attention now that I work with the team, and I'm really blown away by the amount of time and energy that's spent in the community and you know, lending support and raising funds and you name it. So really, really blown away by that kind of, you know, outreach. Absolutely. I think it's super important. I am grateful to be on this journey with you.
Likewise, this has been a great conversation, and I look forward to many more of these conversations and others as it relates to all the cool things that we're doing.
I want to thank Sarah for lending me her time, and thank you for listening. And hey, it's been a while. I haven't thanked Ted Ramey in a little bit for helping put this show together. So Ted, thank you. And I also want to thank Jordan Zadorozny and Blinker the Star for the amazing music that gives the vibe that I love on this show. I'll be back next week with yet another episode of The Undercurrent. In the meantime, keep your fins above water.